This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan. The government of Malaysia has announced its intention to abolish the popular pension system for future civil service recruits and switch to retirement funds by way of EPF savings. But is this a good move, one that would benefit first and foremost members of the civil service and also the country as a whole? Or will this be detrimental to members of the civil service, especially those earning lower wages? Joining me on the show today to unpack this is Lee Hock An. He's a senior fellow of the Regional Economic Studies Program and also the coordinator of the Malaysia Studies Program at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. Hock An, welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks, Dashran.
So, what are your overall thoughts on this idea?
Yeah, so I think this has been on the cards for some time, with Malaysia moving, like many, many countries, towards an aging society, right, where a larger and larger share of the population is advanced in years. And so the share of the retirees is also higher. And with that, the share of the working population, as a share of total population, is declining. And then you have that compounded with the cost of the pension. So again, yeah, it's something that has been part of the public discussions for quite some years. And Malaysia kind of has a readily available solution, right, which is, or alternative, which is the EPF. And as you said, with, I think, paired with salary increases is an important reform. So this is offered for new recruits is something, right, that I think is inevitable that would be brought to the table. I think the pension and being a tax funded and a guaranteed monthly income until lifelong, right, until death, and the other benefits. So it's believed to be too onerous to sustain, and I'm inclined to agree with that. But at the same time, right, it's also about the numbers and the data. And I think here I feel that it's really rushed, just sort of an announcement, and then it's sort of we're left hanging with, you know, what are the further details, and it's disappointing that there's this lack of disclosure. Like, what is the actual financial burden and the underlying reasons? What are the broader terms and implications of the reform? I think, yeah, there's certainly a lot more that has not been brought to the public attention. And so it's not necessarily that, you know, there needs to be cause to dispute this reform that's being undertaken. I think there are many who would be on board with the need for this kind of shift, but lacking confidence, right, in the approach so far and in the amount of information that we have received.
So how does the EPF system, Hock An, compare in terms of providing retirement security and social protection for civil servants compared to the previous pension scheme? How would you compare and contrast these two?
Yeah, I think there's a fundamental difference. Current public service pension is a defined benefit type of scheme. So it defines, right, stipulates how much you get. And, you know, I think typically with pensions, right, it's not, it doesn't exhaust itself. So it's provided lifelong, and certainly for Malaysia. So it doesn't run out, and you would get that fixed amount as long as the government can afford it and honors the deal, right? So that's the defined benefit. So I think, you know, what's important to bring into the discussion here is a certain dilemma in regarding, you know, retirement and pensions, right? The longer one lives, which, you know, which is a good thing, right? But that also, right, entails needing income,
right?
And the risk of it running out, right, if you have a fixed pool of income. And so with the pension, the future taxpayers, right, and maybe, you know, other investment institutions will absorb the risk of the pool running out, or one's retirement income running out, because then it will guarantee the amount that through this defined benefit system.
Mm-hmm.
The EPF, right, is a defined contribution. So what is stipulated is how much you contribute regularly, and you pool that savings while working, and then drawing on those savings when you stop working. So the final amount is also not really assured, although, you know, we can make some kind of forecast based on certain assumptions about the dividends and so on. But of course, what we would know is that what is the we can project with greater certainty is how much would be contributed. And you can, you know, make some prediction about how much total savings. So I think it's important to outline that in a more conceptual sense. Now, specific to Malaysia and the pension, so I'm going to base it on the baseline of 30 years service, because
okay,
that is that is a certain baseline in which, you know, if you achieve 30 years of service, then there are those certain entitlements, right, will
mm-hmm.
be maximized, in the sense that if you get serve more than 30 years, you don't get more, right? So after serving 30 years or more, but the pension will be 60% of last drawn basic salary.
Right.
Right. If you serve less than 30 years, then there's some proportional, which I think are a bit too, you know, the specifics we don't need to get to. But again, for 30 years. Now, just simply, that's quite simple and I think easily understood and widely talked about as well. But there are also two other important rewards. One is the called Ganjaran Pension. So it's like a pension reward. And that is a payout based on the months of service. Again, up to a maximum of 30 years or 360 months. Based on, and then it's sort of there's a formula based on the last drawn salary, and then there's also this gantian cuti rehat for unclaimed annual leave. So the principle is that you worked instead of claiming the annual leave, and therefore it's sort of a reward, which is accrued or paid out at the time of retirement.
Right.
For a maximum of 180 days. This is also known as the golden handshake, and you can accumulate up to 180 days throughout service. And my calculations, of these two benefits, it could amount to over 30 months of basic salary.
Right.
So that's a huge benefit. And I think we want to come back into that, because if we're making kind of EPF and pension comparisons, I think we often omit these, but they can be very, very considerable, right? It's not called golden handshake for nothing, right? You can go out and buy gold. You can take a nice long holiday and get a nice golden tan.
Right.
But these are we have to include them in the discussion. Now, I think there's another one, another perk of the public service, which is the home loan scheme, and with, you know, very favorable terms and also more fixed terms. So
right,
there's general contrast with the public service and then the private market, right,
mm-hmm.
which may offer attractive interest rates for a home loan for the first 5 years. But then after that, you're subject to the base lending rate going up and down.
Right.
Whereas the public scheme at the fixed 4% interest rate, right? Again, right, it mitigates some of that risk. At least you know what's in store, and it is a quite attractive interest rate. So, yeah, I think there is interest. I think it's necessary to be talking about EPF and pension. But I'm going to go here at the onset to just say that I think we got to be cautious about making these comparisons. And
right.
I think, and I would go even so far as to say that I would be against a singular comparison of EPF versus pension. That is, you want to say that, oh, this is what you get from EPF and this is what you get from the pension. Okay, and I think some, you know, have done that, and maybe you could even find that, you know, EPF, based on certain assumptions, you know, can even grant you a monthly income.
On the show with me today is Lee Hock An, Senior Fellow of the Regional Economic Studies Program and Coordinator of the Malaysia Studies Program at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. We continue our discussion after the break. Keep it here on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. the show with me today is Lee Hock An, Senior Fellow of the Regional Economic Studies Program and Coordinator of the Malaysia Studies Program at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. And we are unpacking the Malaysian government's intention to switch from a pension scheme to EPF retirement savings for future civil service recruits. This conversation will also be available as a podcast. You can look up Beyond the Ballot Box on the BFM app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. If you are listening to this on Spotify, do give us a follow, drop us a review. It would be really, really helpful. So, Hock An, I think the big question on a lot of people's minds is which one is going to, basically improve or safeguard the material conditions of these members of the civil service when they retire? Which one is going, and what's the bottom line going to be? Will people end up accumulating or saving more money, which they can use during their retirement age through the pension scheme or through the EPF model? And I think that is also going to affect the buy-in among members of the civil service. So how do you see it? There's very little data that I could find, but I think Shahril Hamdan on one of the Keluar Kejap episodes, he said he did his own study and argued that from his analysis that it's undeniable that if we switch to EPF, members of the civil service will be reaping much larger benefits because they will be having a lot more money saved up because of the dividends and the sort of a multiplier effect and all of that.
It's great that you brought that up. So I just want to reiterate, I take quite a different approach, and I think a lot more cautious, maybe, sort of my own inclinations about this. But we are also talking about, really far into the future, and there's a lot of uncertainties.
Right.
But it's also what, I come back to what I said just now. I think basically one reason is that I think it's really no contest how to beat the pension scheme.
Right.
Firstly, if you're making that kind of comparison that you referred to, you're talking about, let's say, okay, retirement until how many more years? You compare that with exhausting your EPF versus receiving pension. But if you live beyond that, up to 100 on the pension, you're still going to get the pension, right?
Right.
And you once we consider the incentive payout and the golden handshake, and right, so one lump sum of perhaps 33 months of monthly salary, again, right, that's under that's under the pension scheme that's provided for retirees right now. And I don't think anybody's going to advocate that, oh, instead of that, take out one big lump sum from EPF.
Right.
So we have to again look at the fuller picture. I think the crux about the sustainability is the sustainability of EPF. I think what really we should focus on is to allay concerns about the risk of it running out, right? Because that is, right, fundamentally the biggest difference, right? And the strongest feature, the greatest assurance about the pension. It's not so much that, it can be quite a substantial amount, but really it's about it doesn't run out, right? Barring an extreme kind of crisis of the government, so people will keep getting it. And I think I would add that it's maybe not even really necessary to persuade people that EPF will give superior income. Because bear in mind, the introduction is supposed to come with salary increases.
Right. Right?
And I think there are other benefits that also, we can highlight, especially the portability. So the pension, right? So one drawback is that, well, you've got to remain in the service. And if you leave early, you might forfeit it. Or you have to work, still serve out the time, even if it's early retirement, to get any benefit. With the EPF, there is the portability. And, well, it may seem like a taboo because this is saying that, well, it can move between public sector and private sector. But on the other hand, maybe Malaysians are open to talking about this. Maybe the younger generation, right, have a different mindset, not so much enter the public service and stay there right out your whole career, but now they can be, we could sell this, or this could be a selling point, that with the new scheme, improving the salaries, but also you can move in and out.
Right.
I mean, if that is the case, and I would urge that this needs to also be part of the discussion, because it is about making my question is what else is part of the reform in terms of the administrative structure? Are we moving towards a more dynamic civil service? It is not really so that is incorporating more technology, for some of the frontline services and be more effective and efficient in that way. But again, I think that portability, these are the other selling points. Now, I'm not saying that there's comparisons to be made, but I think coming back to the crux of it, which is the pension and addressing the main concern about transitioning from EPF to pension, which is how long will it last, right?
Right.
So not so much that, am I going to get more? But the assurance is that I think is most pertinent is to, let's say, we can generate the scenarios about, what sort of amounts can be accumulated of savings under the EPF based on the pay scheme. And we have to, it can be done on the current pay scheme, but the promised revised one, right, that's where it needs to be presented and rigorously calculated. And then I think the important scenarios to present are, if you make monthly withdrawals, a retiree on the EPF in that kind of future, whatever, 35 years from now, if you make withdrawals equivalent to 60% of basic salary, meaning to say, if you are going to take withdrawals at the same rate as you would be getting the pension, right? So let's say your final income was, last drawn income was 5,000, under pension, you would get 3,000. So ask the question, okay, if you take also 3,000 per month under the EPF, how many years can you go before that runs out?
Right.
I think that is the more important thing. And then you can present as well, if you draw 50%, then you can stretch it out a little longer. The assurance, I think, that is more important to say that, look, moving to the EPF is as good as the pension for this amount of years. Because
right.
The other one, the comparisons that you make is, again, you have, there's so many variables. And you cannot just say that, look, EPF until, life expectancy, right?
Right.
And speaking of which, I think there's an important piece of data that needs to be in the public consciousness about it when we're talking about this issue. People are kind of more aware of the life expectancy numbers, but that's not the precise one that we should be using. Life expectancy at birth is the frequently cited one, which is 73 for men, 78 for women. When we're talking about retirement, it's people who have lived until that retirement age to be thinking about living in their retirement years, right?
Right.
So there is a life expectancy at 60 or whatever it may be. If we move to 65, life expectancy at 65. Life expectancy at 60, right, is higher because life expectancy at birth is for the entire population, including, right, those who had, died younger. But life expectancy at 60 is 78 for men and 81 for women. So those years also, would factor in, and I think should really be treated with seriousness and sobriety that, when we're talking about the how much on average the EPF needs to stretch.
Right.
It is more than the numbers that we typically find about life expectancy at birth. We need to look at life expectancy at 60.
The key distinction here that I'm getting and just want to re-highlight, reinforce, is that when the members of the civil service are on the pension scheme, it's like you said, if they retire, when they retire, let's say at whatever age, 60 something, and their last salary at that time was 5,000 ringgit, 60% of that is 3,000 ringgit. That means from the point of retirement until the point they die, they will be getting 3,000 ringgit every single month. If they live till 100, then it's until 100. If they live till 120, then it's until 120. If they live till 80, then it's until 80. Whereas EPF, I mean, most of us are familiar with EPF. So what the government is arguing, and many countries around the world, is that the pension scheme is unsustainable, which is what I want to focus on this next question, Hock An. Do you find the pension scheme unsustainable? And if so, why has it become unsustainable?
Yeah, Malaysia is not the only country grappling with this, and various other countries as well. You know, the more high income, so they have passed through this this sort of phase before, right? Aging society, and also having public pension, and many have made the shift from the defined benefit to defined contribution. So whatever the other equivalents or corollaries to the EPF, and it's hard to make these sort of comparisons. And I also haven't really done the in-depth research enough to pinpoint specific countries. But in general, yeah, this is the trend in public sector. I mean, in private, you know, as well, where you have, you know, in Canada, the US, from even private sector, pension schemes that were paying out a fixed amount, right, for life to the more pool savings, defined contribution. And yeah, the reason for the unsustainability, right, logically, right, is consistent as well, where you have increasing number share of the population that is retired. And a smaller share that is working, and the pension bill, and then living longer. We know from the Malaysia numbers. Now, I said just now that we don't know enough, but this is what we actually know. And there is a trend of the pension bill increasing from 11 billion ringgit per year into 2010 to 32 billion in 2023. And that corresponds with 6.2% of operating expenditures in 2010 to 10.7% of operating expenditures in 2023. So, yeah, I think it's moving in that direction, and that's the concerning trend. The total number of pensioners now is about 930,000, as far as the data I could get. And this data is just really, really, you know, very obscure. I have to, really search in some of these Ministry of Finance, the budget supplementary documents. I mean, why isn't this, you know, more brought into the public domain? That, again, is part of the issue here with, you know, we needing to know a lot more. And the gravity of it, and what is the timeline? So, I mean, it's not just like one, you know, of course, we can look at the total number of public service employees. And I think that's at about 1.4 million at the moment. But we also need to know what is the age profile, you know, and where certain recruitment drives, surges may have taken place, and what are some of the implications? Because, you know, I think we're looking at those who were recruited in the 1980s, 1990s, who could be retiring soon. So is there, you know, a coming crunch? Now, over the past, that's the question to be answered. Over the past two decades, I looked at some of the, just in a very general, the overall numbers, but there's been a slowdown in the overall growth. So year to year, the increase in the public service employees, right, has slowed down, not declined in number, but slowed down its growth. There's also been an increasing proportion of management and professional grade. So there are, you know, these varying effects of the overall number, all right, but also the other one of when there's more management and professional level, that's higher salaried future retirees. So what is the overall effect of this? None of us have the data. The government would have some of the data to present that fuller picture. And I think that's where, you know, we can make a better assessment, right? And I think just in the interest of democracy and full disclosure and accountability, that's what, you know, we should be hearing.
Hockman, when we discuss unsustainability, essentially we are saying that the government does not have enough money to be able to pay out this pension scheme month on month for however many years. That's why it's unsustainable, right? Wouldn't a way to solve this issue is to tax the rich? So we are talking about, let's say, you know, we can go about it in so many different ways. We can increase corporate taxes. We can have inheritance tax. We can have a billionaire wealth tax. So many different ways in which we can then increase the government's revenue to then carry on with these types of pension programs. Why aren't we having these kinds of conversations?
I think in general, it's an issue that needs to be talked about. I'm glad that you brought it up in terms of increasing the progressiveness, which means the higher the income, then the higher the marginal rates, right? The rates that are taxed on the higher income brackets. It's already been part of the discussions, and I mean, been some tweaks along the way, right? But I think there should be more discussion and more pressure to keep moving further in that direction. And in terms of higher income taxes on the higher income brackets, that is one important attendant issue here. It's interrelated. But that resolves the question, that is addressing the question of the overall government expenditure. It's still a question, though, which then the question arises, well, with more government expenditure, and I think, yes, there will be need for that, but where does it go, right? And it's not... not so obvious or immediately apparent to me that the pension is the one that needs to be sustained, or that the money, that additional revenue should be serving pension as a whole. I think in terms of priority, there should be some discussion as well in terms of some kind of ranking. So not to totally omit the question of pension and even a defined benefit, sort of amounts, right, that people are entitled to receive. But maybe on old age pension, universal nature.
So since you brought that up, do you think that could be something that we move towards? So, for example, now we shift to the EPF model for civil service. Does this free up space for the government to implement other types of pension schemes to protect vulnerable communities? So, for example, a senior citizen pension scheme where every citizen above the age of 65, for example, will get 500 ringgit per person per month until death, regardless whether you come from the private sector or the public sector.
Technically, yes. I mean, if there's some, savings, right, then there can be some redistribution. It's not just about pension, because once you're talking about the savings to the government, right, then you have, there's so many other priorities as well that could be justified. But again, I think if we are concerned, right, and I think many are concerned about just the general well-being and some of the most vulnerable in society, and disproportionately higher number of poor households, that is, as measured by the poverty line, are senior citizens, right? They're retired, they're not working, they may only depend on remittances from children, right? And very meager sources of income. So it's a universal pension is something, it's really well worth a robust and national discussion. I think it would be money, well spent, right? Because it recirculates back into the economy. It is in principle and morally a good thing to do as well, as a recognition, as a note of the contributions that they have made, their lifetime, and I think it can be done in a simple way as well. So on that sort of universal basis, or if there's any kind of targeting, keep it bare minimal kind of cutoff points or whatever qualifying marks, because once you introduce all kinds of terms, then it becomes cumbersome, and then people can start to try running to game the system and so on. So that there's a distinct case to be made for universal pension, certainly I would put that even before any other kind of universal, you know, incomes, right?
Right.
For the whole population.
So what measures should be implemented? Let's say, because the thing is, the government seems to be moving in this trajectory. Like you said, it's not just a Malaysia problem or dilemma. It's dilemmas that many governments around the world are contending with. If we end up moving from the pension scheme right now that the civil service benefit from and move towards the EPF retirement savings, what measures should be implemented alongside the EPF transition to ensure that adequate retirement benefits and protections are there for members of the civil service?
I think what has already been talked about is a necessary step.
Mm-hmm.
Terms of raising the salaries, because the accumulated savings, right, it will be proportionate to the salary.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we are waiting on that. And hopefully the adjustments will be reasonable and also will be progressive. That is to say, with special attention to those at the lower end. But you also, I think, want to not just about the welfare aspect of it, but as I was saying just now, to reform in the sense of the civil service administratively, to be more dynamic, to be more incorporating more technology, perhaps, and allowing for more mobility and actually welcoming that as a plus point, that you could have people a bit more moving between, right, public sector and private sector, and retaining your EPF savings,
right,
throughout. You can continue accumulating that. There are a few other assurances, I would say, because I think they are just going to continue, but it would be good for the government to just clarify and maybe needs to reinforce, right, the provision or its commitment, which is the home loan. I think I mentioned that just now.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a big perk, and I think it's very widely utilized because there are the benefits, right, to a loyal civil service that is long serving,
right?
Where of course it's a double-edged sword, but on the plus side, gaining the experience, how the government functions, skills and knowledge, right, along the way, and that commitment. And so something like that home loan, can make it both attractive to join but also to stay, so retaining the talent. But of course, as I was just saying, right, that mobility can also address some of the questions about the lack of dynamism. So the flip side is that if there is this pension, sometimes people are just riding it out, right, just drifting towards that pensionable age and not really motivated anymore, and lethargic and not really bringing new ideas. So the opportunities to move in and out, right, can also add to some of the dynamism that might or can be an element, right, that can add the dynamism. I think the healthcare, again, it's merely about more assurance that, the current provisions of public health, right, will be sustained permanently, right,
mm-hmm,
well into the future, towards, because we're talking about recruits this day, meaning retiring in whatever, maybe 35 years from now. So, it would, I think, mean a lot to know that when people retire and sometimes their medical needs would be increasing, that the public health system will still be there, and their access to it, right, is,
mm-hmm,
going to be preserved. I would just highlight those two, I think, as important. Again, it's not that there's any threat of them being taken away, but it's something that I think it would still mean quite a lot and go a long way to say that, look, these remain in place, and the civil servants, this is the new deal. Again, I don't think we should really be because the new entrants, new recruits, right? It's not really, you're taking away something from them. I mean, truly, okay, they're giving something that really is not really an option. It's the EPF, it's the new terms,
right?
But I don't think need to stress too much again in having to match everything, you know, blow by blow, especially because the pension is such a sweet deal.
Before we wrap this conversation up, Hock Man, just some final closing thoughts from you. Would it be fair to say that where you stand right now is that you do think that, you know, this transition is going to happen? It's in line with what a lot of countries are doing, and there are potential benefits to this transition, but the core problem right now is the government lacks transparency and it seems to be rushing through this rather than communicating and you know, discussing their processes with members of with various stakeholders, including members of the public.
Yes, Darshan, thank you. You summed it up for me. But to reiterate, yeah, you know, I think, yeah, more information and data can go a long way.
Right.
And I think it is both the rakyat's, you know, right, and the government's responsibility, and it would, you know, help to also fix attention on the solutions, on having a rigorous and objective discussion, and avoid it becoming, you know, detracting into all kinds of finger pointing or being politicized, as well as guarding against misinformation. So things like, what is the proper life expectancy we should be referencing, right? And I think, again, the comparisons, not like which one will actually give you more, but moving to the EPF, you know, how much you can actually sustain and what remains in place as the benefits, and broaden the scope of what are the benefits are to the future civil servants. I think, yeah, that needs to be part of the broader discussion. And I think with that, you know, we can maybe have more people on board and we have the fuller picture, more on, or you can get more buy-in and have confidence, you know, that this is something worth undertaking.
On that note, Hock Man, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Darshan.
That was Lee Hock An, Senior Fellow of the Regional Economic Studies Program and Coordinator of the Malaysian Studies Program at the ICS Yusof Ishak Institute. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.